Okay, good day everyone. Welcome to the 20th episode of Dole Tag. Wow, it's been a long journey, and I know you guys must have been expecting this podcast to drop for a while. I think the last time I mentioned 20th episode was like 2 weeks ago, I guess so. And a lot has been going on, and part of it I was not feeling fine, part of it I had to travel, so I've not been able to do a recording of podcast and all, but now I'm back. And with me today for the 20th episode, I have a guest with me, Tayo, Temitayo Sadiku. So Tayo, please introduce yourself, let people know about you.
Okay, thank you Ifeoluwa. My name is Temitayo Sadiku. I currently work as a performance marketing manager at Financial Sense. And yeah, I think that's most of it about me. I'm a business person. I like stuff that makes money. And I'm also a space person, a space nerd, if we like that. So I like space related stuff and sci-fi stuff. I'm a big fan of Elon Musk. So.
Well, really, that's not weird at all, but anyways, but just know that today we're going to be picking on your brains, because you literally have some interesting stuff that I feel like a lot of people will want to hear, that I myself am so curious about, including space. Like, I don't think I've ever wondered. I know there's a moon right outside the heart, but apart from that, I don't think I've been so curious about what happens in space and all. But I believe our discussion today will kind of maybe shine a bit of light on that. And
hopefully.
So, but basically how has been life like for a while now? Let's say for like let's just start for this year. How has been life this year? At least we are in the third month of the year, so far.
Well, I can't complain. That's the truth. I can't complain. I've actually like been pretty stable, pretty chilled. I would say I've had a good year so far. I don't want to jinx it, but so I don't say I've had a good year. Hopefully 2024 ends on a good, really great note. 2023 was also good, so
like for example, now, okay go on, sorry, go on. I think you still want to share something. Okay, so I this is like the first quarter of the year, right? So January to March, it's like the first quarter, and you're kind of rounding up the first quarter of the year already. Are there like goals that you plan for this first quarter that you felt like, okay, yes, I think I've achieved them, or maybe you are close to achieving them already? Stop stagnant.
I'll say, you see, that's one interesting thing about me. I don't set goals. Yeah, I'll put it like that. I am not a fan of goals and all those kind of things. I'm not a fan, because I feel like a lot of people set, oh, new year goal, new year this, new year that. And a lot of times it serves as like a beacon towards where you want to get to, but maybe not necessarily the right thing for you to be using as your beacon, basically. So personally, I don't set goals. I think a couple of my friends actually, like, you know, at the start of the year, a couple of my friends were like, okay, I'm having this goal for the year. This is what I want to do this year. This is what I want to do. And this is what I want to do. I want to fixate on this, fixate on that, and all of that. For me, I just told them, I'm like, I don't have any goal. I have like a grand vision. Let me put it like that. Like, I have a vision for what I want my life to look like. And most of the decision I take kind of positioned by me to actually like eat that grand vision. So the reason why I actually like abstract goals versus vision is one thing that actually like has stuck with me, and probably like I think since I was 17 when I heard that saying, So it actually like goes like we overestimate what we can achieve in 1 year and underestimate what we can achieve in 10. So that actually like just gives that whole, goal versus vision. This is so when you actually like set goals, you're like, okay, a goal is time bound. It's most of the time it's usually short term. People actually say they want to have long term goals and all of that, but at the end of the day, you actually like have time, you bound it by time and all of that. But vision, on the other hand, is a result of small efforts that compound, like small efforts in the direction of that vision. So it's a vector quantity, in my opinion. So it's like small things that you do that actually like compound towards that grand vision that you have. So I have like a clear idea of what I want to look like in the nearest future. But what I now do is I don't actually like plan to now do X, Y, and Z things to get there. If X comes along and I feel like X is something that aligns me towards my grand vision, I will do it. Y comes along, I'll do it. Z comes along, if it does not align, I'm not gonna do it. So it's not like I actually like just plan all these things out and set goals and all of that around it. It's counterintuitive, but I find that in a lot of ways, it does not put pressure on me to actually like not enjoy life itself. Is Albert Einstein at some point, the doctors asked him to stop smoking so he would live longer, and he was like, I think there's no point in living longer if he's not going to enjoy the life that he's living. So I have that kind of philosophy where I actually like want to enjoy life, and I feel like life is about the journey itself, not necessarily a particular destination. So if you do small things well enough, it will compound, and you get your grand vision. You most likely hit your grand vision. So that's my philosophy. So I don't have any goals, but I think I have done a lot of small things this year, this quarter, that if I say I set them as goals, I'll probably have relaxed on them. But I've done a lot of small things this quarter, and those small things have actually like gotten me results and in some way, and some did not even yield any result. But I'm pretty sure that at some point in the future, it's going to like pay off. Even my current career is not where I actually like thought I was gonna be. Well, it's still part of my grand vision, but it was something small and seemingly insignificant that I did back in 2017, 2018, 2019 that actually like positioned me to be where I am today in my career.
It's a very, very interesting perspective towards life, actually. And well, looking at it really makes sense, looking at it from that perspective. But I am looking at the sense in the sense of how do I, the reason, okay, maybe because I call it goals, maybe I can say milestones now. Because to me, I feel like there needs to be a way one needs to measure this grand vision that you have. Now, how do you now measure it in the sense that, okay, I'm getting closer to this grand vision? So it's like somebody that is, my grand vision is probably to maybe go to US, for example, right? I want to travel from Nigeria to US, and I know that there are some milestones I need to hit. For example, I need to get my passport, I need to get a visa, I need to get a plane ticket, I need to, oh, sorry, book a plane ticket, then from the plane ticket then fly down to the US. So those little achievements or those little milestones are what may I see as goals. But I don't know, in my own analogy, now you prefer to just have that end goal, that vision, grand vision, which is okay, I want to go to the US, and I say you just allow life to play through what happens, or just allow life to happen and say, okay, as long as I get to US, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't know. I want to just try and understand it to get, because in my own mind, yeah.
I would not say I set milestones to like It's just kind of like, will I say, gut feeling most of the time, like, okay, is this thing working? Yeah. Is it not working? No. So I don't fix it. It just boils down to, you know, what I said earlier around like fixating on the destination rather than the process. So I'm actually like more of like a process person. The truth is my outlook to these things is I understand that it's unconventional, because truth be told, I also understand what's on the other side of it. Like, okay, when you are process driven but you don't actually like measure what the outcome is at every point in time, which I actually like do in my day-to-day job, so you get. But that's because I'm actually working on somebody else's at somebody else's company, so you get. But you know, for me, I don't I tend to look at it in the sense of, okay, not the destination but more of the actual process. What am I doing? Does it feel right? Is it yielding some results? Because one of the things that actually like tend to make people quit stuff early or something is feeling like, okay, I'm supposed to hit this milestone and I've not hit the milestone yet. Sure, you get. And it starts feeling like, oh, the process might be broken and all of that. But sometimes it's just a matter of landing enough impressions or knocking the same place for long enough that you'd actually like get a result. It's unconventional. I don't know how to explain it, but I just find that it works for me. Help me like that. Like, I just find that it works for me. I'm not saying that it will work for somebody else. If you are a goal-driven person and someone who is able to dedicate yourself towards a goal, you should probably stick with it. I find myself unable to like, you know, sit down and like over fixate on a destination. I tend to like immerse myself in the present, like, okay, what am I doing now? And will it get me closer to where I want to be, rather than where do I want to be? And then after where do I want to be, what can I do to get me there? So it's just like a maybe you say bottoms up approach or something, like where I am now, that's also where I want to get to.
Yeah, well, thinking about it actually, it makes sense. There's one thing I made mention of that, you know, kind of sticking to me is the thing you said about focusing on the present. Yes, like so you are the goal-driven aspect is, I have a future in that sense, which is the goal I want to achieve, and that's like one side. The goal I want to achieve is what is motivating me to do what I need to do. Then there's the other side that says, okay, I am focusing on what I'm doing at the moment, which is the present, and that is enough to motivate me to do what I need to do. Like, I don't really know what the next thing is going to be, but this is what I'm doing at the moment, and that's what I'm focusing on at the moment. So I don't know if that's kind of a hard example, because that's just the way it's just coming to my mind. It's not a bad philosophy, right? Honestly, it's not, because even in meditation, because meditation is one of the things that I kind of just do at my free time and all. You know what they basically teach you in meditation is you being able to focus on the present, and you know, you focusing on the future a lot can be very overwhelming. In the sense that, oh, I've not done this, I've not done this, I've not done that.
Exactly.
Imagining even the yeah, even the looking at it in the sense of maybe the goal is something that is quite big or something that you feel you can't do. It can be very overwhelming and be stressful. So,
I also
like,
have that
the best
problem
thing
of
is
being unable to do two things well at the same time, or no, not do two things well at the same time, but like if I'm to multitask, I'll probably like this thing. If it's already getting to like three, four things, I'll probably get overwhelmed. So most of the time you need to multitask when you actually like set goals, because there are some things that you need to run concurrently, that you need to run in parallel. But maybe I'll just put myself as someone that batch processes. Like, I do batch processing. So if I want to do something for a day, that's probably what I'll focus on that day. And if I want to do another thing tomorrow, that's what I'll focus on tomorrow. It's not like I would now be thinking about, okay, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do this, I have to do that. At the same time, I'll probably just, maybe I have a problem with focus, but my own is focus on one thing at a time, at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, multitasking is not necessarily the strong suit of. I don't want to be very gender biased now, but for guys, multitasking is really something that they really struggle with. Ladies might find it very easy to do that, but guys, I myself find it very difficult to do. It says that thinking about two things at the same time is very stressful. It can even be as simple as maybe one very big thing and one very small mm-hmm. thing, or it can even be two small things like what do I eat and do I pick this, what time is the meeting, or what do I say in a particular meeting. Thinking about those two things at the same time can be so stressful, no matter how little it might be. So yeah, I totally get you, honestly. And it's also something that I myself, you know, find it very difficult to do, like multitasking, thinking about two things at the same time. But there's this question that's coming to my mind now.
Okay.
What part has like relationship played in your life's journey? So when I mean relationship, like family, friends, romantic relationship, people, like what part has relationship you try played in your life and so far?
I'll say everything. I owe it to one relationship or the other that I built, either intentionally or accidentally. I would say I've actually like been lucky to have, for the most part, good people around me. And for the bad ones, I turn their bad energy into good energy. So I think first thing is the first contact of like the you know, my immediate community, my family, basically, like that I was born into. I was actually like born into a, you know, an average, moderate family. And I would say my dad is someone that will go any length for his kids. And my mom is someone that loves her kids to the moon. So I actually like grew up in that environment where my parents love themselves a lot, and they also extended that love towards us as their kids. So growing up, none of my siblings, like all my siblings, my younger ones, we actually like have this tight-knit relationship. Sure, you get. And that tight-knit relationship, I would say, kind of defined who I actually like grew up to be. So I actually grew up to be someone that, which is something I think I picked from my dad. I trust on contact. So I'm not someone that actually like gets skeptical about someone when I meet you for the first time. But as time goes on, it's not like I would just trust you and just be gullible, because on the other end of that spectrum is my mom, who doesn't trust anybody on contact. You understand? So
yeah.
So it's something that my mom actually like has this principle that she like tries to instill in us, that if somebody offends you, you actually like absolutely must forgive the person, but do not forget what they did. It's not like you should not forget because you want to do your own back or you want to use it to spite them. It's that you should not forget so that you would not put yourself in the situation that made them do that thing to you again. So it's like somebody slapped you because you are standing on their bag. The slap annoyed you, you understand, and then the person apologized and said, okay, I've accepted and all of that. But it's not like you're now going to stand on the person's back again. That would probably provoke the person to slap you again. You understand? So,
yeah.
It applies to a lot of things.
Don't speak into my shirt.
Yeah. So, on the other hand, my dad is someone that actually, like, you know, on contact, he trusts and this. And I think that mix has actually, like, helped me meet good people and also, like, you know, I've met people on the other end too of the spectrum, but I would say if I met 10 people, 9 people were good, because I would open myself up to you on contact. Like I'm kind of someone that, at least for my superficial things, I don't hide it. Anything I feel like if I tell you will benefit you, I will not hide it from you. If you ask me a question that answering it would actually really change things up for you, I'm going to answer that question like down to the last detail that I have, like the last information that I have. I'm not someone that will just and that's part of trusting someone. If I have examples that I even like from my own life, I'll give you all that example and all. But at the same time, I would also I would also watch you and all of that. So it also like gives me feedback as to what kind of person you are as well, and if I can continue sharing that kind of stuff with you. So that has actually afforded me the opportunity to actually meet people who are actually genuine. A lot of my friends now, I'll say it's probably because of the way I actually share how I am, that actually has also gotten them to trust me. Because sometimes some people don't have that skin to just trust you on contact. They would just want to okay, let me observe. But then when they throw a few questions at you and you actually really open to answering their questions, so I'll just say, yeah, I'm open. You are open to answering their questions. You are open to sharing your experiences and all of that. It lowers people's guard, and it actually gets you more like people that you that can actually at least say they are, you can actually at least say they probably are interested in what you have to offer or something like that. So that's how I actually deal with my friends, and I've actually gotten to meet friends that I have, I would say, if I'm going to classify the circle of friends, I would say I have three circle of friends. And in my circle of friends, I actually know that all of them are going to have my back at any point in time if I needed it, and they actually had the means to do it for me. So that's this thing. In terms of romantic relationships, that one is interesting, because I would say a lot of who I am today too is also determined by the ladies I've met, because they've served as a major drive for me. So they've
That's good to hear.
No, it's true. There are some ladies that they will keep you on your 10 toes, and there's a lady that actually felt like revenge was the only way to. In hindsight, it was a foolish thing, but back then I was young, 18, so it felt like, okay, the only way I could revenge was to become as successful as I can be. And so, well, it panned out well. The heartbreak actually at least is leading me towards a point of success. Well,
God.
that yeah.
Wow.
So I'll say my romantic relationships have actually they've been influential in my journey to where I am today too. So
Okay. So I think we kind of have a lot of similarities, honestly. And I just want to be sure if this happens to you too. Of course, I also kind of I know it's not the best way. Honestly, it's not the best way to relate, but I think that's just the way I'm just wired. And meeting you at first, I kind of have this, I give you this 100% trust that okay. Now let's let me I trust this guy. I trust this person. I'm meeting for the very first time. But the moment you but that opens me up to a lot of heartbreaks. When I mean heartbreaks, I'm not really talking
Vulnerabilities.
about romantic relationships. Yeah, exactly. That opens me up to a lot of vulnerabilities in the sense that now yeah, you mentioned that maybe out of 10 people you meet, 9 people that are good. But in my own case, out of 10 people, most likely maybe the only people that I meet that want to have a genuine relationship with me should be like maybe like 4. Do you get like 4 people? The other ones have probably just come and go kind of thing relationship. And this is not romantic relationship, this is even just I'm trying to make friends, you know, get to know people and all those kind of things. So it kind of, you know, hurt a bit in that sense, because I'm like, I'm coming to know you for the very first time, and I kind of really trust all the things that you're doing, all that you're saying, but after a while just everything just goes poof, and it now feels like I lost something from my side, because I feel I gave my all attention and, you know, resources in that sense to you, but maybe me expecting something in return, I get nothing. Just, you know, everything just goes like that. So it's kind of making me a bit skeptical about even making friends at the moment. It's something I'm even struggling with at the moment, like making friends, because I'm just so scared of the cycle repeating itself, that I get to trust you, after a while just disappears, and, you know, like just goes like that and the whole friendship stops. So I know that, as I said, that is how I'm wired, which is like give you all the 100% trust at first, but I don't know if I would want to go along that same line. But how do you do it? Like, how do you give somebody like 100% trust first time meeting them? Because it's just too strange.
I actually, like, I think I learned this one too quite early on. But yeah, it's like I mentioned, it's based on how my dad actually, like, you know, how my dad is. So actually, like, I've already picked that up from him. But I was able to actually, like, find that there is scientific evidence to back that it's actually like the best way to actually, like, win in life, like trusting first. So I don't know if you've come across any material on game theory.
Not really.
So the game theory, like, it's an experiment that some scientists did. I think it's been long. I forgot the name of the guy that did it, because it's been a while since I actually, like, watched that stuff. But on game theory, the algorithm, they actually, like, you know, created different algorithms and pit algorithms against themselves. You understand? But and then when they pit those algorithms, it's hard for me to explain, but I don't want to, like, have a long-winded explanation. When they pit the algorithms against themselves, the algorithm that always come out on top is the nice algorithm. But it is not an algorithm that is nice, that is so nice that you actually, like, that is, like, let me say, the over nice algorithm that wins. It is the algorithm that is nice but has restraints. So, like, let me say, you know, there is unbridled generosity, and then there's bridled, like, where you can actually, like, you know, you can actually, like, curtail yourself. So how the algorithm that wins all the time works is, if you and I actually, like, the algorithms playing against ourselves, the nice algorithm will always start with giving you a green. So green is, like, good, red is bad. The nice algorithm will always give you a green when it's starting. And if you give it a green, it will give you a green. Give it another green, it will give you a green. Give it another green, it will give you a green. That is how the nice algorithm works. But then the algorithm that now actually, like, trumps the nice algorithm that just gives only greens, because at the end of the day, that algorithm ended up losing in life. Then the algorithm that I would actually, like, say, like, that was why I said that I learned from my mom, from my dad, but also have picked some traits where I don't actually, I forgive, but I don't forget. You understand? So the other algorithm is now, like, the bridled generosity, like generosity with niceness, we get that's actually, like, cautioned, It's not like you are too nice that you become a pushover. So for that algorithm now, if you do me good, I mean, when we are starting out, I do you good, you do me good. If you do me good, I do you good. Like that. If we keep doing ourselves good, at the end of the day, there will be no issue. So it plays well with the nice algorithm. But then if you now have somebody who is mischievous, you understand? So I do you good, you do me good. I do you good, you do me good. Then on the fourth round, you do me bad. The, what was it called? That algorithm would do you bad on the next round. So the cautionary algorithm, it will do you bad on the next round. You understand? So if you do me bad on the next round and you now like say the mischievous one now also does the let's say algorithm A does retaliate, you understand? And then algorithm B that was mischievous retaliates again, you know, it starts becoming a cycle of retaliation. So at the end of the day, it closes out like that. And there is now like the last one, which is like the forgiving bridled algorithm, something like that. And that is the one that always wins all the time. So it is what it is, the one that they call like the actual nice guy. So you get, so you do me good, I do you good. You do me good, I do you good. You do me bad, I'll do you bad. But if you now retaliate that bad again, I'll break the cycle and do you good. So you get, so if you do bad two times, I'll break the cycle and do you good. Then if you now do bad again, after I've done you good, after this, I'm going to do you bad. Then if you do bad again, I'm going to break the cycle and do you good. So like that. So how they now like scored it is, if the two of us actually like do good, would actually like get only 1 point. You understand? If the two of us, if one person does good and the other person does bad, the person that does bad will get 3 points. I think that's how it is. If the person that does bad, I made a mistake. If the two of us do bad to ourselves, we get 1 point. If the two of us do good to ourselves, we get 3 points. If one person does bad and the other person does good, the person that does bad will get 5 points. I've forgotten how the scoring goes, but the way the algorithm plays out, always plays out that the person that does good, that is forgiving, but does not make himself a pushover, actually like ends up winning. So if someone does you good, do them good. If they do you bad, do your own back. But and if you do your yes, if you retaliate and then the person does not retrace their step, so actually like, okay, this person has retaliated, I don't think this person likes what I did the last time, you understand? And then they change their ways, they now start doing you good, you guys will start putting yourself on good terms. But if you retaliate and the person retaliated back, extend an arm of goodwill to them again, and then that way you, at the end of the day, you would actually like end up on top if that's how you actually like play out. Yeah,
true, because I'm just even thinking about once I just came to my mind is like in the game theory, I don't know about it, right, and you have explained how it works, but I was just thinking, is there not an option where you get to say you're not playing again or something?
I don't think I can
continue this relationship.
The thing is, for that one now, they did everything to run 200 cycles straight.
Okay, so there's no way you could even, there's no option of stopping. You literally just have to.
Exactly. And one interesting thing about it, even in nature, it plays out like antelopes grooming themselves. It's actually like an example of game theory. If an antelope knows that like this thing is going to end sometime, as humans, we don't know how long we are going to live. The certainty of death is real, but when it's going to happen, we don't know. So that actually like gives us that this thing where we don't know where this person will be tomorrow. So that actually like gives us that whole vibe of, okay, let me do well so that in case this person is in a better place tomorrow, they can also do me well. You understand? So it actually like plays out like that, even in the animal kingdom. Antelopes also do like that, where there are ticks that actually like suckle on them, and if they don't actually like address those ticks, if they don't groom themselves, like, and I can't groom myself as an antelope, another antelope has to groom me.
Stupid one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if the other antelope does not groom me, I'm also not going to groom the antelope. I'm going to do my own back. I'm not going to groom the antelope. And at the end of the day, all the antelope population will die. So antelopes have learned that. True. And what they now do is, okay, you do me, I do you. You help me, I help you out. So as you are grooming me, when you come for grooming, I'll also groom you. If you don't groom me, next time, nobody's going to groom you. So at the end of the day, it now forms like that kind of head mentality where everybody now like conforms. It's just, and it also plays out in the rule of law. You commit a crime, you go to jail. But if you don't, after a while, you come out, and that is the period of forgiveness. If you actually like come out, and that's what has actually like sustained our human community, where, okay, everybody's trying to live a communal lifestyle. We are trying to like, okay, look out for our neighbors and all of that, so that everybody is taken care of. And that actually like basically sustains our existence as a species. If we stopped caring about one another and anything goes, we are going to descend into a state of anarchy and everybody is going to die. You understand? So that's actually like another like people, the justice system is also another example of game theory. The Cold War was an example of game theory. You know, breaking the cycle of I create nuclear weapon, you create nuclear weapon, I do this, I do that, also took, and which was even what inspired the whole game theory thing. So it plays out in a lot of ways, and it also plays out in friendships as well.
Yeah, that's quite a very interesting concept, honestly. Can you recommend a book on game theory? Abby, it's just Game Theory, that's the name of the book.
Yeah, there's a book on game theory. Like there's the actual book Game Theory that you can actually like for most people will not read. I'm also not a big fan of overreading. Like I'm not a fan of people that I read 50 books in a year. Like I would rather you read one book in a year and implement what is in that one book, because implementation is the hard part. So I would say watch Veritasium's video on game theory. So Veritasium is a YouTube channel that I love watching, and watch Veritasium's video on game theory. I think he actually like covers game theory well. That was not the first place I saw game theory. It was in an academic paper, but I can't remember. I think it was on ResearchGate back then, but I can't remember that much. But Veritasium's video, I still watched it recently. It's the most like comprehensive and easiest way to actually like understand game theory for anyone. Yeah.
Okay. So guys, I would attach the link to the Veritasium video on YouTube to the podcast so that you guys can, you know, have a look at it and watch it and understand. So there's this quote I got from one of my let's say one of the people that I follow when it comes to podcasts. I know his name is Stephen Ballett. Most likely myself might have heard of him or not. So he's posted something, was like, one of the earliest habits to learn, right, is to take nothing personally. One of the earliest habits to learn is to take nothing personally. So I don't know, what do you think about that statement? Do you think maybe it's wrong or not?
I think that's the best way to live life. Like, honestly, like, just take things chill. Like, okay, I'll say it in Yoruba, but then I'll translate it. It's saying Momowara Lemi Kodija. So I know how my fellow person acts, so I'm not going to be angry about the way they behaved. So if you are somebody that I already know that this, you are a nonchalant person, if you behave nonchalantly around me in such a way that it actually annoys me, I'm probably just going to suppress my annoyance and just say, oh, that's how it behaves. I'm going to talk to you about it to actually like caution you and all of that, but taking it personally and then, you know, going all out, making a force out of it, most likely not going to be me. So, except, you know, maybe it's already getting out of hand, and I'm not even taking it personally because of myself. Probably taking it personally because of you, because I feel like maybe you are somebody that actually, like, I really care about. I'll be like, if you continue going like this, you might actually just end up somewhere you don't like yourself. So in that case, I'll tell you. But if I don't really care, I'm just going to leave you to keep wallowing in your self decadence. So
but the thing is, what I'm thinking about now is, if you don't take things personally, some situations personally, don't you think it's not like that situation won't get better? For example, now you're in a community, right? You're in a community where everybody, maybe in a street or something, the street is just littered with refuse, garbage everywhere and all that, right? And you decided that, okay, nobody's showing any interest in maybe getting things done and maybe cleaning it up, or everybody getting like a dustbin or something just in front of their house. Then you decide, okay, I think I'm just going to take this up, and you do something about it, right? You do something good about it. Don't you think, because in that case you have taken it personally, because normally it's supposed to be like, I know maybe what he's talking about, there's the aspect where you talked about that maybe you're getting angry or somebody wants to make you angry or stuff like that. It's not just take it personal and all that. But what about looking at it in the good side? Now, you know, this is supposed to be like a community joint effort, but nobody in the community is doing anything about it, right? And I don't like the way it is. Now, me doing something about it, does that mean I'm taking it personal? Doesn't that mean I'm taking it personally? Because if I don't take it personally, then everything will just spoil. I don't even get my point. Like, everywhere will just, if you leave everybody to do the things, do things the way they seem fit, there won't be that sort of order or in that environment. Just the scenario I painted, you're in the community, everywhere is just littered, and you decided, okay, let's get a dustbin for every house on that street, so that everybody can take their refuse and put it in a garbage. I put it in the dustbin. Simple as that. So I feel taking stuff personally might help in a community setting where you feel things are going bad. Or what do you think in that area? Do you still feel maybe it shouldn't be your business in that? I just used that scenario. I just painted that scenario. There are other scenarios.
Yeah, now that you say it, I think it's in my it actually like branches in two ways. You know, the way I actually like thought of it was, you know, taking things personally in the sense of your interactions to the your reaction to the negative side, or when you interact with other people, and the way you react when people do things that you don't like. So yeah, I agree with what you said, because it's also something you don't like, but you have taken it upon yourself to actually like fix it. So, you know, instead of being angry, like taking it personally in a negative way, you've actually like taken it personally to fix it. I actually agree with that. And yeah, I think I've learned a life lesson. I didn't think of it like that. Although I would have probably like acted in a similar manner. Let me cite an example. I just moved to a new place in Lagos, and one of the challenges that we have is the water situation. So, it's all this. You know, they are trying to be this thing. They are trying to act as if they are not Nigerians, putting tanks on the ground, and then they only pump water up just to one storex at the top. The problem is that they have four big tanks on the ground, but they don't have pressure to actually like supply water into the houses and all of that. So it's the tank at the top that actually like supplies water into the house. Problem is, the tank at the top is leaking, And if Nepa takes light, it means that within 25 minutes, 30 minutes, the water in the tank is gone and there is no water. So there was this time that there was no water for about, 5 days. That was 2 weeks ago. And it literally meant that I could not do anything that had to do with water. I had to buy pure water and, try to get my up and get water to just do basic stuff. But what I was now thinking of doing at that point, like I was actually like almost pushed to the point until Nepa brought light though, was pushed to the point to go and buy a generator that they would use to pump water for the whole house. Because at that time it felt as if everybody in the compound was like, I don't care. If there's no water, there's no water. So I was actually like at that point where I actually wanted to buy a generator. But fortunately for my pockets, they brought light that day and I didn't buy it. So I think, yeah, I'll probably like act in a similar manner. And if that actually like counts as taking it personally, yes, I'll take it personally in that situation.
I think it's just two-sided. One just needs to know the situation should kind of determine either you take it personally or not.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, you the when we you know I think we had a call 2 days ago, and we're just discussing, and you told me that you are into some business that you do some like outside 9 to 5 things, and like your own business and all that. I don't know if you can just maybe just talk a bit about what you do, the type of business that you do, and stuff like that.
Okay. I'll say what inspired business is the need or the interest in having security, and put it like that. So I want to like be secure in that sense, that is security around, financial security basically. So my destiny is, my ethos is, job security is not that they can't fire me from my job. Job security is that if they fire me from my job, do I have somewhere else to lean on, or can I get another job within the next 3 months? That's why I actually like see as job security. Can I get another job like at the call of pam, I get another job. So that means I'm actually like, job secure. So that's what actually like give birth to me like doing businesses. So I try to categorize my businesses in like, physical traditional businesses that are kind of like unsexy. They are not sexy. They everybody like my pride just like, ah, nah, I don't want to do that. When you tell somebody I have a shop, it doesn't make sense to them. Like, why would you have a shop? Like, it doesn't make sense. But they will forget that the guy in Alaba or the guy in this thing, from his small shop, he has mansion in the village. So I will ask you, why do you think that person is successful? Like, if you check his account balance, you are probably like you that you are earning 500K a month. You are jumping beside him and all of that. Like, you cannot have that kind of account balance maybe in the next 20 years. You understand? So I'm actually like, put myself in that sense where I actually like set up traditional businesses. But at the same time, I also understand that there's opportunity in the online space. So I also have online businesses. So for the online businesses, I have Dbox, which is like a SaaS platform to help you like, help convert your blog visitors into customers. So people come to your blog, they read your blog posts, your company and all of that, but after reading your blog post, they leave. So basically this just tries to like, okay, they read your blog post, but is there a way to actually engage them and get them to actually like, become customers of your product? So that's one. Secondly, I have a blog, like it's actually a traditional niche blog. So people might not know, but niche blogs are actually like money pits. I'm not going to name the niche blog because it's niche blog, and the rule of thumb is don't tell anybody what your niche blog is. Even when it blows up, don't tell anybody because you just find people, someone that will just go and duplicate your content and set it up on another domain and all of that. So that's the second one, a niche blog. Hopefully in the next 3 years, the niche blog will blow up and I'll be making 100K a month from it, 100K USD from it. Then the traditional business, on the other hand, is right now I'm actually like focused on oil and gas. So basically the gas aspect of it, LNG. So my goal is to actually like, you know, create a franchise out of make a franchise brand out of LNG. So the way you have Oando for petrol station, you have the LNG station, but then, you know, somebody else can set up an LNG station, name it Estargas, and they actually like, get the naming license franchise from me and all of that as time goes on. So I have that. I also have like aims to actually like expand into other sectors. So one sector that I am actually like interested in is water. So, you know, clean, affordable water. Then aside water, we also have bread. So staple wow. stuff. and then agriculture. So the agriculture, I'm actually like really particular about palm oil and cassava. And most likely I'm going to actually do that even before the bread and the water thing. Or table water thing. So I have a friend that I'm actually like consulting with on that. The reason is palm oil actually like is an export commodity, and I feel like in the near future we are going to actually like Nigeria is actually like tilting towards diversifying away from crude oil, and the trend might actually like indicate that agriculture might actually like, you know, become the next phase. And best bet if you want to do agriculture is try to do something that you can export. Or if you are not even going to export, you have the capacity to refine and make other products from it. Not like I'm just going to go and start planting tomato and all of that. Yeah, it's not like tomato is bad though if you can do vertical farming with tomato, but it's just capital intensive and I don't think I have the money for that right now. So palm oil. Then on the other hand, cassava. Little do people know that, I don't know how to speak that English. People don't really know that. Cassava has like an interesting byproduct, sorbitol, that is actually like of high commercial value. So it's not only garri you can get from cassava, it's not only fufu you can get from cassava. Sorbitol is actually like really, really valuable. And is that
so what would they use the sorbitol for? Because this would be like the first time I'll be hearing something like that.
You find sorbitol, it's a natural sweetener. So you find it in your toothpaste. They use it to make food sweeteners. They use it in coloring, like food grade coloring. It's an industrial product. And I am actually like, you know, I'm usually perplexed by the fact that Nigeria is probably the biggest producer, or now they do cassava pass, but we are not exporting sorbitol in the quantity that we should be. So this is the interesting fact about cassava, which is why a lot of people actually like just, you know, do cassava farming on a small scale. If you don't have a factory close by, after you harvest your cassava is gone in 2 days. Like, it is useless. So if you harvest cassava now, you need to process it within 24 hours, 24 to 48 hours. If not, that cassava is useless. You can't process it anymore. So if I were the Nigerian government, I'll probably just like, you know, find a way to finance or encourage, because I don't feel like government should do everything for us. We are living in a capitalist economy. we just have not found someone who is serious about aggregating this thing and actually like really doing it. Most of it, if there's anybody that's going to do it, it will probably not be through VC funding or all of that. It's probably going to be like, you know, out of pocket. And that's where problem is. Nobody wants to pay out of pocket for this kind of thing that you don't even know how it will pan out. Number one, farms are fragmented about, like, you cannot say there's a central way to actually like get farm produce to you if you actually like create a grand factory. Can I get the farm, the cassava to my factory in less than 24 hours after you harvest it? That's the number one thing that needs to be sorted. So if there's 100 farms, are they far enough? Are they within that 24 hour distance to get to my factory? So that's the first problem. And the second problem would now be, okay, after you get to the factory, within that 48 hour time frame, can I process all this volume that I'm getting? If you can actually like hack that, I think there's somebody that is currently hacking it. I don't know. I think she's in Osun State or Ogun State. One of those two states, yeah. It's a lady. And they are actually like exporting Sorbitol right now. And when I actually saw that, I'm like, this is good. And that actually like proves that there is a model that can actually like work for Sorbitol production.
That can work.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of insight. Honestly, I've never even thought. The only when I hear cassava, the only thing that comes to my head is Gary.
So even Gary, do you know that if they don't process cassava to Gary in 48 hours, you can't eat it anymore. That's why they usually have to, like, you know, immediately wash it, soak it, and all of that, because cassava will become poisonous after 48 hours. Like, to become poisonous, there's a compound in it that is actually poison. I've forgotten cyanide, yeah. It's poison.
Yeah, cyanide. Yes. Yeah.
So that's why you have to like soak it and all of that. If the cyanide actually like, you know, gets to poison the cassava itself, that cassava is done. You can't eat it. If you eat it, it's sayonara. That's the thing. So that's interesting. Businesses are actually like, you know, there are businesses that people can do. LNG right now, it's not a good time for LNG, I would say, because the current, you know, there's two problems that's battering LNG right now. When I actually initially started my LNG stuff, it was actually like, it actually did well. And the outlook for that business was that by this time, I should already have 10 plants. You understand?
Okay.
But I don't have to. Yeah. I have to. But the thing is, if you actually like, you know, take that out and say, you want to like just use that as yardstick, you might not actually like end up going forward. The current market is that the crude oil market is actually like fluctuating. You know, Russia, Ukraine war, unrest in Gaza, Israel, all these things actually are affecting global prices of commodities. And one of the commodities that's been affected is gas, energy. So on one end, you have that problem. On the other end, we now have exchange rates in Nigeria. So imagine that, okay, when you collected products, you collected it at like, I'm just saying like, let's say it's crude oil. $70 per barrel and dollar was 700 naira then. By the time you sell everything and all of that, you put your markup, you expect that, okay, yeah, mostly I've made profit and all of that. And then you're going back to the market, crude oil has jumped to $85 per barrel. Even if dollar remains at 700 naira per dollar, you actually like are still going to buy crude oil at more at a higher price in the market. And you know, in Nigeria, gas is not subsidized. So on the other end, we now have even if crude oil remains at $70 per barrel, dollar could have gone to 1.5, and now essentially the cost of buying it has also doubled. So there is no how you are escaping it. One of those devils or two of them will always betray you at some point. So that's why I say right now is not like the best time to actually get into LNG. But at the same time, people are still doing it, and there are actually like ways to mitigate all these things. So like number one is, being able to sell as fast as possible. If you get your goods, your products, sell it in 2 weeks. So what I actually like did to allay that problem is, instead of going for a big 25-ton, 30-ton plant that would probably take 6 months, 4 months, 3 months to finish selling, go for small plants, 245-ton plants. It's not like I can't afford to do a 25-ton plant. I can't. But if I go for the small plants, it actually like, becomes modular. That is 2.5 ton. It will take a month in a place that is not so populated. In a populated place where you actually like have good distribution and all of that, you take like 10 days to finish, and they will still be calling you that, oh, we need more and all of that. Like, you should come and refill your stuff. So you can easily go back to the market, because those price fluctuation is not like it is happening every day like that. Like, the differences grow so wide on a daily basis, so you still have your margin in that case. Then
So look,
yeah,
okay. Go on, go on, go on, go on, go on.
so that's the thing with, the gas thing, and pursuing a modular approach. Then one of the reasons why I paused on like building more plants is I want to build towards getting a distribution this thing. So it's like pivoting from B to C to B to B in a kind of way. It's not like I'm still not going to capitalize on B to C. I'm still going to capitalize on that, but I want to actually like become a proper operator to actually like, capitalize on B2C, because if you are not an operator, you will probably like run mad doing B2C business. But on the B2B end of it is, supplying gas to the people that like to other people that have skid plants, that have mini plants like myself. One of the issues that we actually like face as people that have mini plants is getting supplies. Number one, the price actually like is higher than those that actually like get bulk supply. Like, someone that is getting from Axela or something now is a different ball game for them. They are getting best prices. What if I can actually like make it that, okay, I'm actually like of cutting these people that are actually like ripping me right now, and actually like play to the problem that I see other people like myself face. So other people that are doing small plants, I can actually like get a tanker, maybe a bobtail, and that's what I'm trying to work towards. Get a bobtail tanker, and that's just like 12 ton, and then I can supply to them. The interesting thing about it is that the cost of supplying it to them and everything is worked into how much I pay them. You understand? It's worked into how much I pay them and all of that. So that one works in that sense, and it's something that current price volatility will not be affecting me. If you say you need gas today, I'll go to where I'm going to take the gas directly from my papa, come and deliver it to you. Once I deliver it to you, I'm done. Like, I'm not having to wait 2 weeks to finish selling. I'm not going to be putting it, I'm storing inventory. You understand? So that is this thing. Yeah. Now that I mentioned inventory, another interesting type of business that you can start, if you have the capability, start a business that does not require you to keep inventory, considering the current Nigerian situation. So you don't want price volatility. You don't want to be in an economy where people are actually like, you are competing against food, and people are not willing to spend on a lot of things. You understand? So even food itself, the food inflation is about 31% right now. So you are buying stuff today, you are buying stuff to sell today, you are going to the market tomorrow, you can't buy that same quantity anymore. So that's like this thing. The reason why I'm still sticking to gas is you cannot do without gas. You need energy in your house. You need to cook. You need to do things with gas. So you cannot escape it. But there are things that if you are going to keep inventory of them, you probably like should not keep inventory of them. Like, say you are selling, what can I say, sir? You are selling something that, let's say, it does not last, or the price is highly dependent on foreign exchange. You don't want to keep inventory of those kind of things. So maybe you want to do business that doesn't require you keeping inventory. So something like laundry, all those kind of businesses that does not require keeping inventory, and those ones are business that you can still scale and stuff. Yeah,
that's true, because really, as you are mentioning all these things, it's like my mind is being blown away. Like, Tayo, really, you're about to buy a tanker, all those kind of like, are you serious? Like, honestly, like your plants, your gas plants, where are they currently at the moment? You said you have two.
They're Lagos. Lagos.
They're Lagos. Oh, nice. Okay. okay, so for me, I'm the business I'm into, apart from my 9-to-5, is I'm in the food business.
Oh, nice.
Food sector. So that's all, because just as you have said, people need energy every day. Also, people need food every
yeah.
day. Like, and one of my major plan this year, by God's grace, which I'm hoping I'm able to achieve, is to set up a restaurant for my business, and like where people can, you know, come in, you eat and go, come in, you eat and go, just the way you have a very nice restaurant all around, in that sense. So but what I'm doing at the moment is to I'm into like chinchin now. Mm-hmm. So what I do, I don't sell chinchin to directly to customers. Of course, if they request for it, they can get it, but I'm more focused on people that own chinchin businesses.
Yeah,
so I'll do the chinchin in bags,
and then
at very cheap price in bags, and I sell to them, so they can either repackage it and put their branding on it, or they can also resell again to other set of people. So, and yes, and it's something I started this year that I started working on, and yeah, it's great. It's not there yet, but it's
yeah, that's the thing. It takes time. Takes time.
Yeah, of course.
A friend of mine and I were discussing something like food. This thing, you know, food is cheap in Jos. The only issue that I had with the plan was transportation, bandits, and all of that. So, you know, there are like a lot of things that people don't know that get planted in Nigeria, strawberries. Like a lot of fruits that people don't even know. So he was telling me of a friend of his that, you know, she plants strawberries in Jos. No, I don't even think she's the one that plants it. She just has connection of strawberry farmers in Jos, and then she gets strawberries from them for cheap, and she buy bags like in like big, say 50 kg. 100 kg, 200 kg, ship, fly them down to Lagos, like pay for the flight for the strawberry down to Lagos, and she's selling to like ShopRite, the likes of ShopRite, the Spars, and all of that. So that's like, you know, interesting business too. So food is actually like, you know, definitely good business. The thing that I wish Nigeria can actually like be is, you know, and this is not this is maybe out of scope, but is that yeah, a lot of the things that we have been doing, and we've seen a lot of billionaires being made from this kind of essentials, but I think it's high time Nigeria deviates from essentials. So what do I mean by that is, yeah, people need salt. Dangote provides salt. People need sugar. We have Bua. People need cement. All these things are essentials, but they are not, in a way, they are not innovative things. Even me myself, I am actually like, but do I want to go and start building an innovative stuff right now? I tried it in the past and failed woefully. So if you actually like want to actually like, maybe in my opinion, if you want to move forward as a nation, away from just being a consumption society, we need to become a production society. And the things we need to produce, we know we need to start finding ways to produce textiles from petroleum. We need to start finding ways, and we need to take big bets from existing people. It's not It's not that I'm going to like it's a bet, a big gamble, where you actually like open up yourself to say, okay, there's labor available in Nigeria, there's raw material available in Nigeria. Let me do this thing in Nigeria and export it. Yes, Nigeria has its problem because you start having some government agencies start disturbing you. Like if a mentor of mine was talking about how bad it is doing business where you start a manufacturing business and in no time you're actually like paying taxes to over 20 something different government agencies, all of them redundant and useless. They are not doing anything to further your cause. They are just there to collect one revenue or the other. So that one aside, so you get that one aside. So we need to like find production opportunities like electronics, plastics, and not just doing it for the sake of selling in Nigeria. As we actually like have this thing, like we have Africa as a market. Why can't we make Africa dependent on us for imports? Like, can't we be the ones in exporting? We're only exporting energy at this point as Nigeria to other African countries. That's the only thing we're exporting. Like, we should be exporting more than energy. We should be exporting, finished products. Like, going away from just, oh, this is a, like I mentioned sorbitol earlier. Yes, you can export sorbitol, but they use sorbitol to make toothpaste, and a lot of the other components that they use to make toothpaste can also be made here in Nigeria, can be sourced locally. Why aren't we also like finding ways to make toothpaste to export to other African countries? Why don't we try and like, why can't the government, create a standard organization that is on par with the standard organizations abroad? Like a manufacturing association that actually like really cares about you actually like having outputs, not just them generating revenue for the association. All these things is what I actually like, I actually feel like I actually like progress the nation, but I digress. I'm sorry.
But the thing is, for one of the things, it's not that a lot of people haven't thought about this or they want to do it, because there's a part of government and there's a part where you need to play. Government needs to kind of provide the basic things that you will need for such innovation to happen. For example, right now as I'm speaking to you, I don't have lights in my area. Imagine that. Now you want to start a plant that is going to be very innovative. You will need energy, you will need light. Now, if you are saying, okay, I don't want to be dependent on the government, now you want to be able to do it yourself, do you know the amount of money you will spend just to generate electricity in your place? If you are saying you want to be using a generator, or you want to be using a power plant, or you want to be making use of solar, the amount of money you will spend on that, imagine government has that thing ready. You just have to just connect to the grid and you are powered, you have constant electricity, and you're able to do your business. The money that you're going to be putting on those generating sets or power generating sets, you can literally put that money back into the business. But imagine you're starting something that big. You need to first of all spend a lot of money on making sure that there's electricity to where you are, constant electricity. So that is just, by the way, that literally other policies that that are put in place just to kind of, that is not really helping the situation in a way. It's kind of even frustrating it, because by the time I even think about it, like, okay, I have this idea, I have this idea. By the time I now look at it, okay, where do I want to start from? I'm like, okay, I think to start is very, very expensive, because now the basic things I don't have. And the government is never ready at the moment to help with that. So yeah, I totally feel you, because that's the only way this country can move. If you move from the consumer mindset to the production mindset, it's that's yeah, that's the way basically. We're back to the podcast in no time. I've just a bit of information about the giveaway. Dotag is celebrating 20 episodes, and we are doing that to celebrate with our listeners, and we're giving away 10,000 naira to lucky listener. So to be a part of it, I want you to subscribe to any of our podcast channel, which is on Spotify, Music X Match, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, wherever it is you're listening from. Be a subscriber and follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. On Twitter, I want you to just comment your handle, comment your name, and yeah, you can be the lucky winner. The winner will randomly chosen and be announced. Thank you, and back to the podcast. So, Tayo, there's a lot of questions I wanted to ask about the business aspect of it, and we kind of summarized it with, talked about it when we were, talking about the business that you do and all. So, Tayo mentioned something in the beginning when he was introducing himself. He said he's a space enthusiast, right? So I was like, okay, I just want to learn one thing or two about space. So there's this question I want to ask. So,
yeah.
About space, basically. So what do you think is like the most fascinating thing about like space exploration for you?
For me, what's most fascinating about it is kind of abstract. That's the thing I'll say. It abstract in the sense that I see space exploration as a necessity for mankind. Just as we have ventured across the oceans to find new lands, I think it's also imperative that we venture across the abyss to find new land. It's not necessarily because when our forefathers would they went to settle somewhere else, it's not like they could not stay in where they are. Like, it's not like the situation is something that they can't solve the problem of where they are. They could have actually remained there, but they actually took off and went elsewhere to settle. So that settlement mindset is what actually ended up birthing diverse cultures, the diversity we actually find ourselves to have today as a people. Imagine if everybody remained in one cluster from the time of the cavemen up until now. There will probably be just one culture, one religion, one language, and all of that. But humans are meant to be curious. Humans are meant to be explorers. So why limit yourself to staying in one place then? That's like what I find most fascinating about space exploration. And all these things, the diversity that we actually have, where everybody does not think in one direction, is what has actually made the world progress up until this point, where we've had the Stone Age, the Bronze Age, Iron Age, Industrial Revolution, AI Age, and everything. If, like Yoruba would say, everybody ba soon talk corrosive corner. Like, everybody cannot sleep. I mean, I don't know how to say this thing. Everybody cannot sleep and just lie down and just think in the same direction. Yes, if everybody did that, we are going to back ourselves, which is why I'm also I'm kind of against echo chambers. So if you are in a community now, everybody says I ate this thing, and everybody is resonating I ate this thing to one another, it actually becomes an echo chamber of I ate this thing. And if you allow that echo chamber go on for long enough, everybody ingrains that fact, and it actually becomes a truth. Even if it is not something that should actually become, it should remain an opinion. You understand? So that's what echo chambers cause. There should be room for dialogue. There should be room for contrary opinion. There should be room for exploration outside the known truth. So, which is why I actually find space exploration fascinating. And it has actually your Air Force Air Maxos, product of space exploration, precision surgery, product of space exploration, studying microwaves and how they actually interact with human bodies and all of that, product of space exploration, development of different fuel mixtures and all of that for rockets. So it has also played a role in the way we actually generate energy on Earth. Nuclear power, nuclear fusion, all these things will actually and space exploration is not limited, it's not just flying to space. It is even like looking in space, astronomy, all those things, they actually comprise under space exploration. To prove the general theory of relativity, Albert Einstein had to actually prove it, using the curvature of light, like proving that light curves around bodies in space. And you there is the only way you could have proven that kind of thing is to actually, explore space. There's no way we could have proven general theory of relativity on Earth here, because most of what happens on Earth follows classical mechanics. So Newtonian mechanics, we are all of us are actually in the same frame of reference, and all these things happening and all of that, we just think that okay, that's how it should happen in space. But Albert Einstein was able to give us another perspective to what gravity looks like. This we are able to understand what the space-time fabric is, how that affects our life here on Earth, how that might have contributed to how our Earth evolved. And we've been able to use this knowledge to even map, okay, this asteroid might actually hit Earth at this also time, or this planet might actually be able to support life. All these things, just because we're actually able to understand what's happening out there, we're able to explore. And it also opens up an abyss of imagination, which is something that if the human mind lacked imagination, then the human mind is doomed. If you are someone that does not sit down and daydream, stupid things. That's why I actually have I kind of try and live a simple life where I'm just thinking of stupid, foolish things a dog having his head on his tail. Those it might seem stupid, but sometimes a stupid thought can just lead you down a spiral that actually births something important and all of that. The
Yeah.
whole thing that led to general theory of relativity was a stupid thought as well. So even
Yeah.
people swearing for Isaac Newton because Apple dropped on his head. How does Apple drop on your head and
No.
you thought of writing a formula out of that? So
It's pretty interesting, actually. I think sometimes I just try and just look at least anytime they say there's a rocket going to the moon and all that. At least I've tried following it on
Twitter.
CNN,
Okay.
even on Twitter also, just to see the okay, rocket is taking off from space, sorry, from the Earth, going into is in orbit, that's going into the moon, landed one space station, something like that. And of course, I watch a lot of sci-fi movies too, so that also helps. Kind of picks my interest also in it a bit.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you a very funny question.
Yeah.
Do you believe aliens exist?
I don't have any reason not to, and I am a staunch believer that aliens exist. Why do I think that we've not discovered aliens yet? No, it's the truth. The truth is that if we look at the way Earth formed, scientifically, Big Bang theory wise, there is aliens out there. And even if we are going to say creation theory, that okay, God created Earth and all of that, I believe that partially, in a way. I believe that in a direction that other people don't believe. So let's say, okay, God created this thing. When God was creating Earth, at least he created other planets too. The combination of, see, what comprises us as humans is not so rare that this kind of combination would not happen on another planet. You understand? We are carbon, hydrogen, water, hydrogen, oxygen. That's actually what comprises most of us. This thing, proteins. Proteins are basically hydrocarbons, long chain hydrocarbons and all of that. We have water. We have little cool. Like, how many? This thing is so abundant in the universe. Like, it's not like on Earth we have like the perfect balance of this quantity. Earth is not the only place that actually has the perfect balance of this quantity of this thing. So when I actually like see sometimes that somebody will be like, okay, yeah, there are the Earth-like planets. There's this one, Kepler, something, something. And that's like one of the planets that scientists are like, okay, this is the, I've forgotten the full name, but I know it's Kepler something something b. I've forgotten the full code name. The planet is a planet that, based on the distance of that planet to its own sun and the ratio of the size of its own star system, sorry, not sun, I'm just using sun so that people can understand, but star system to itself. So the main star, I know our own star is the sun. So the distance between us and our sun versus the distance between that planet and its own star, number one, the ratio between the size of the sun to the planet and the ratio between the size of our planet to that to the star, the possible chemical combination on the planet and the chemical combination on our own planet, all these things align. So you understand. But here is the kicker. Life did not start existing on Earth scientifically until about some million years ago. But Earth has been existing for 4.2 billion years. So if we say Earth has been existing for billions of years, that means that there's been a lot of formations on Earth that has had to, like the Earth has had to undergo in order for us to get here today, where we are actually like talking on a podcast. But we are looking at that planet that is millions of light years away. Whatever we are seeing with whatever telescope that we are using to look at that planet, we are looking at the past of that planet. That we are looking at that planet, what it was billions of years ago. Do you understand? So the way light travels,
I think I'm getting
yeah.
that.
So the thing is that when you are looking at the sun itself, you are looking at the version of the sun that existed 8 minutes ago. It's until 8 minutes later that you are going to know how the sun looks like now. Do you understand? Based on the
True,
distance
true,
between
true,
us
true.
and our sun. So based on the distance between us and the planet on and that Earth-like planet and other Earth-like planets, because we don't have an Earth-like planet that is close enough to us to say, okay, this Earth-like planet can support life. But we have like other Earth-like planets that we've identified as far away. At some point, if we actually like say, okay, probability that if we have 1,000 of these Earth-like planets, that 1% of them will carry life. And we have hundreds of millions of these Earth-like planets too. Do you understand? If we actually like say, 1% of these Earth-like planets will carry life, or 0.01% will carry life. Best believe that at least there is another planet that has. I'm even of the opinion that there's another planet that has humans like us, where they are driving cars on their planet right now, or maybe they are still living, they are
Honestly.
still hunting animals with sticks. But that's my reason, because in actual fact, we are not seeing what is currently happening on that planet. We are seeing what happened on that planet billions of years ago, based on our current technology to look into the past. Perhaps at some point where we actually like become a more advanced civilization. There's this, is it Kabyshev, type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4 type civilization and all of that, where we are able to harness more energy, harness the full potential of our star, or even conquer other star systems, where we are able to like warp space-time, bend space-time, and actually like compress, create wormholes to move between space in a short distance, like short period of time and all of that. Maybe then we'll be able to like peak, even if we are not warping space-time to actually like travel to that planet. We might just need to warp space time just to be able to like see what is currently happening in that planet. So instead of seeing millions of light years away, now we are now looking at the last 1 million years or the last 500,000 years. Even if we did that, that would be a very, very, like, you know, it would be a great achievement for mankind and all of that. So that's literally why I say, until we're able to do that, and then we don't see anybody killing animals on that planet, aliens exist.
Okay, that's like, it's a very, very interesting theory, honestly. Like, as you're just mentioning it, it's just movies that just kept popping up in my head. Movies like Guardians of the Galaxy, Star Wars, this Marvel, this Marvel that they just released. So like, okay. So like, this is a lot to think about, really. But to me, I don't think aliens exist. I think we are the only one in this world.
Which is an equally scary assumption to make. I actually like, if there are aliens, it's scary. If there are no aliens, it's also scary. Which one is good? Well, make aliens this. I actually like wish there are humans on other platforms. If there are no humans, I don't feel like there is a civilization that has advanced more than us here on Earth, because the universe itself is finite. Like, there is a finite, we have like an abstract view of what the universe looks like before it existed. Sure, you get. So not like before it existed, like when the universe started existing up until now, we have like an idea of how long it has taken for this universe to exist. So based on that, now I would say I don't think there should be a civilization that is more advanced than us, even if there is maybe like just by a little. Because if there is a civilization that is actually already a type 1 civilization, then they should have visited us by now. Or maybe they even visited us and we looked like ants to them and they didn't care about us. So
it's cool hearing all this thing, honestly. And I guess maybe one of these days I'll still bring you back on Dotag and we'll just kind of just talk about like space exploration, like in full. And
yeah, I'm going to prepare properly, so that I'm going to remember the names of things.
Okay, so we almost getting to the very end of the podcast. So on this podcast we have a tradition. So the last guest on the podcast will ask the next guest that is coming on the podcast show a question. So the last person that was on the podcast, Oshogo, is asking you a question. He said, if you had the chance to change something in the past or present, what would it be?
Change something.
Something either in the past or in the present. What would it be?
I wouldn't want to change anything in the present. Change something in the past. I also don't want to change something in the past because it will ultimately alter the present based on, you know, time. The fabric of time. Change something in the past.
Time. Maybe an experience. It might be maybe something that you did that you feel like, I wish I had not done this. If I had the chance to go back in time, just as you just said, go back in time.
Honestly, I like, it's just like my kind of philosophy of, you know, live in the moment and don't regret anything means that I don't have like any particular moment in the past that I remember to say, oh, I want to change something. Yeah, but if actually I change anything in my past right now, it will currently alter everything I am now. And also being someone that lives in the present means that I'm actually happy with what my present looks like. So maybe I'll think of something, change something in the present then.
So do you mean that every decision, every single decision that we have made in the past is what brought us to where we are at the present?
Yes, cause and effect.
Every single decision that we have
made. Yes, cause and effect. And we are a God. You know, in space, there is something called chaos theory. And in space, everybody is interacting, like body. When I say body, like I mean things, is interacting with one another. You know, gravitational pull is actually like I'm actually like exerting gravity on the Earth as the Earth is exerting gravity on me. I'm exerting gravity on the car as the car is exerting gravity on me. All of those kind of things. So everything is exerting gravity, like at least some small force. No, there is weak forces and strong forces. Even though it seems as small as possible, we're actually like having an effect on ourselves. So, which is why there is that whole chaos theory is like, you know, you can't really there's randomness in nature and you can't really predict a lot of things. So you understand? But you can actually like you can find a pattern to it. And chaos theory gave birth to a lot of, you know, interesting fields in mathematics, in even in finance and all of that, where you can actually like, you know, create probabilities around what is likely to happen. So personally, I feel like everything that's happened in the past, like even to what I ate on a particular day, that actually like made me go to toilet and not made me meet one person that I might have met if I didn't eat what I ate and all of that, you know. A lot of things. I don't know how these things actually like ended up panning out, but all the decisions I've actually made in the past culminated to where I am today. I was put in a room when I got into Obafemi Awolowo University, first block H block F, room 8. That room, I met the one person that I would say actually like altered my direction, my journey when I actually like entered OAU. So you understand? I would have been someone that actually pursued academia more than anything, but meeting that person made me understand that there is more to school than just academia and all of that. You know, these things, it seemed random and all of that. A random thing or a random program on a computer allocated that best space to me. Unfortunately, that person too was allocated that best space. You know, it seems like this thing. So I won't say I want to change anything in the past. If I want to change anything in the present, I'll just say I want to change my attitude towards work. Like I want to actually like maybe not change it like per se, but like maybe improve my attitude towards work. Yes, I actually like have a good attitude towards work, but I actually like want to do more and be like that. So because I feel like if I actually like, you know, have a much better attitude towards work, maybe I can actually like I'll even like draw further and closer to my grand vision.
Yeah, that's a very nice way to look at it. Well, looking at the world in a holistic manner, everything is connected together somehow.
Yeah.
One way, there's one
Everything is
thing that is
connected.
linked
Like
in. Okay, so yeah,
there's no this thing. Like, what is if my
there's
father
no
did not if my
isolation.
father does not did not meet my mother, there is not going to be tie-up. It's not possible. Like I had the connection with my dad, and he was like, "Hey, I would have given birth to another tie-up." No, you are not going to give birth to a tie-up. You probably not even name the kid tie-up if you met another person. You get like. That's the thing. These circumstances had to be put in place for Tayo to be born, simple and flat. So cause and effect. I don't want to change anything.
Okay, that's actually an interesting topic to maybe like dive in later on, by the way. So I want so the question for you now is what question do you have for the next guest on the show? I don't know who the person is going to be, but you need to
Okay.
I wanted to ask a question here for the next guest so that the next guest can answer the question.
I actually like have question because I watched that last episode. I didn't know I was going to be this on the podcast. You literally reached out to me on Monday, but I have had that question since I listened to that podcast with Shogoden. And the question I have is, you know, the reason I'm asking this question is, you know, Shogo I know Shogo, and Shogo is a goal-oriented person. So the question I have for the next person, probably it can't be Shogo Sha. I'm like, if you are going to ditch your goals, like your goal, like ditch pursuing goals intermittently and all of that, like, oh, I want to achieve X goal, I want to achieve my goal. If you are going to ditch all of that, what would your grand vision be? You know, following up from the conversation we had at the start of the podcast, like, if you are going to ditch intermittent goals for a grand vision, what would that grand vision be?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. So most likely the next guest on the show will be answering that question. And this has come to the very end of the podcast, guys. Tayo, I really, really appreciate you for being on this podcast. This has been very, very insightful. I've literally learned a lot of things that, like, okay.
I learned a lot.
Like, wow.
I learned a lot.
I'm happy I brought you on the show, and thank you for honoring. Thank you for being a part of DoTag. I really appreciate you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Yeah.
This is my first podcast.
So guys, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice. First on DoTag. So guys, just as you've heard, so whatever resources I have, I'll be putting them on the description of this podcast, so that you guys can check them out and also learn one or two things. And as I've said, a lot of us are still not yet have still not followed this podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever it is you're listening from. So please, we'd love if you can just support the podcast by rating it or by following us. We'd really appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening to DoTag today. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. Cheers.